Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Property and Local Tax Division to order. Representative Hertas, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great.
Very good. I'm just fine. Thank you. Have you had an opportunity to pretend to review the minutes of the previous meeting?
Well, I did, and I think you should entertain a motion, having been solicited to do so.
Very good.
A motion to approve.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Hertas. Any discussion on Representative Hertas's motion to approve the minutes of the January 29th meeting? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Members, today the focus of the committee's work is a presentation on the final report of the Property Tax Working Group. Remind you that the legislature created this working group, so I think we have a special obligation not only to consider all comers when it comes to insight on the property tax system, but particular obligation here since we did create the group and there were legislators who were involved in it, and they have come up with a pretty comprehensive approach on property taxes. With that, presenting the report is the chair of the working group, Commissioner Kathleen Gaylord from Dakota County. Commissioner, if you'd come forward, please identify yourself, even though I introduced you for the record, and then you have a PowerPoint with you to work us through, and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very pleased to be here and to talk about property taxes with anyone who will listen about property taxes, and I gather this group are the experts, so hey, this is a real opportunity, and appreciate being here. Nobody's laughing, that's not fair. I'm Kathleen Gaylord. I'm a Dakota County Commissioner. I'm on this group as the representative of the Minnesota Association of Counties, and was elected the chair of the working group. It is, and I'm see here. It was a group of individuals, and I want to stress this, we were not property tax experts. We were people coming together representing various organizations as laid out in the legislation. We were a group of we had members from the House, two members from the House, two from the Senate. We had representatives of business and agriculture, of local government, and also some homeowners. Our charge, before the legislature gave us a charge of things that we needed to do, we were asked to investigate ways to simplify the property tax. And when we talk about simplifying the tax, we're really talking about trying to figure out ways of reducing some of the complexity, particularly in the classification system. As you'll see from the upcoming slides, little changes over time have built up to create one of the most complex property tax systems in the nation. And we were trying to look as well for ways to make the property tax more understandable. And with this, what we're really talking about is the ways that we communicate with taxpayers so that they better understand the tax that that they're paying. Our charge also included examining the property tax calendar and looking at the various components of the property tax system, including the classifications, the credits, the aids, the exclusions, the exemptions, and the abatements. I want to begin a little bit talking about the history of the property tax. Actually, the property tax was first levied about 164 years ago. The first territorial assembly in Minnesota levied the first property tax in 1849. It was a general tax against all property used to support the school system. 9 years later, when Minnesota joined the Union in 1858, the property tax doubled to cover the expense of the state of Minnesota. It was, again, this first property tax for the state was also a general tax, and it was the chief source of revenue for the state of Minnesota at that time. Under the Constitution, taxes on property are to be equal and uniform across the state. It was a lofty goal, but in reality, it didn't happen almost from the very beginning. This is back, remember, before assessors were the professionals that we know they are today, with training and standardized procedures and computers. Uniform assessment was a challenge, and it emerged very early as a significant problem. Inexperienced assessors failed to value all the property. They failed to place fair values on the property they did assess. And in some cases, they simply relied on the taxpayer to tell them what they thought the property was worth. As a result, there were widespread inequities and a lot of undervaluation of property. In 1860, the State Board of Equalization was created, but it was unable to really do enough, and the concerns continued to grow because the tax really wasn't covering the cost of government. Enter Governor Ramsey. To compensate for the loss of revenue, Governor Alexander Ramsey cut the salaries of state officials, reduced the size of the legislature, and submitted a constitutional amendment to cut the length of the legislative session to 60 days. Those measures did cut state expenditures by 36%, and the property tax was reduced 20% in 1862. The legislature reacted to that in 1863 and adopted a poll tax rather than increasing the property tax. Uniform assessment was a goal throughout the late 1800s, but it became obvious that a general tax was not practical, and to obtain better compliance and administration, property should be classified and not all treated alike. Assessors were assessing properties from anywhere from 25 to 40% of their market values. Looking at the evolution of the property tax, the real impetus for improvements in the property tax and changes came with the passage of the Wide Open Amendment in 1905. This key amendment removed all of the restrictions on the legislature's power of taxation, except taxes had to be uniform on the same class of subjects, taxes had to be for a public purpose, and they had to exempt certain properties from taxation. The classification system that we know or think about today was really first formulated in 1913. The 1913 legislature felt that all property didn't receive the same benefits from government and that not all property had the same capacity to pay taxes. So they created a four-class system that mimicked the de facto system of the assessors and assessments at that time. Iron ore was assessed at 50%, household goods at 25%, real estate and livestock and manufacturer inventory and tools was at a third, and all of the property at 40%. Fixing the percentages of the classification within that statute changed the Minnesota property tax from a general tax to a classified property tax. And then beginning with the Great Depression, we again saw massive delinquencies, demand for property tax relief, and three new classes were added at that time. Those were to help homesteads and agricultural property. And a new source of revenue was needed to do that, and that's when you saw Minnesota adopt an income tax. The 1933 changes were the first of many changes to the classification system. Classifications have been changed or added in virtually every session since 1941. And each time they do it, each time it happens, it is something that adds to the complexity of the tax. The state has shifted from income tax towards income taxes being that major source of funding. And as we got into the 60s, only about 6% of state revenues were actually coming from the property tax. In 1967, the state eliminated the state property tax, and the collection of property taxes was turned over to the counties, with 25% of the collections of that new sales tax dedicated to property tax relief. Over the next 40, 45 years, we've seen numerous changes in the property tax and attempts to provide property tax relief in Minnesota, from anywhere from the Minnesota Miracle in 1971 through the Circuit Breaker in 75. Truth in Taxation was added in as a process in 1988, and these are still key components of our property tax system. Most personal property is currently exempt in Minnesota. The state tax levy was eliminated, as I mentioned, in 67, but it came back in 2001. Levy limits were added in 1971. They were repealed in 1989. They were brought back in the 90s and have since expired. We've seen the creation of renters, seniors, and homestead credits, fiscal disparities and disaster relief, changing classification ratios, a nationally unique tax capacity system that replaced the mill rate system, the extension of homestead treatments to relatives, limited market values, new exclusions, credits, classes, programs, and the replacement of the homestead market value credit with the new homestead market value exclusion. Recent years have seen cuts in state funding and increased reliance on the property tax, and it is still the most complicated system across the country. And as we've moved from 1849 to today, we've seen that those many individual and incremental changes to the system have resulted in that very extremely complex system. Little changes add up. In 1913, they began with four classifications. As I mentioned, in 1933, they added classifications to help homesteads and farmers. And over the years, we've developed 55 different classifications, counting all the separate tiers in the property tax system, with nine different class rates assigned to those various classes. And the question really becomes, does it need to be this complex? The next few slides will try to give you a sense of that. As you look at this, this is about half of the classifications in effect in recent years. What's the other half? When you think about property taxes, it's a little different than sales taxes or income taxes. You don't take something and multiply it by a number and there it is. It's a different kind of a system. And even when you think about it in its most simple terms, you take the property tax levy and you figure out what a tax rate is needed based on the amount, the base that is based on the amount all of the properties have in the jurisdiction in terms of their value. So you take that value and you determine what class it's in, and then you multiply it by that tax rate, and voila, there's the tax. Unfortunately, it's a little more complicated than that. It's gotten much more complicated, as a matter of fact, and this is an attempt to show each of the individual components of that simple calculation have multiple different things that affect it. This I call the poster child of the complexity of the Minnesota property tax system, and you may have seen this. This is an attempt to do a flow chart to determine whether or not a property qualifies as an agricultural homestead. These are the decisions that your assessors have to make in order to make that determination. And it's just one example of how each time you make changes in the system and you make changes, it adds to all these different things that have to be looked at. It makes it more complex and costly to administer the property tax system. Again, does it really need to be this complex? 55 different classifications, multiple exemptions. I called it 14 categories. I believe it was something like 47 different exemptions out there. Six exclusions, you get 10 credits right now. Multiple tax bases, special valuations, and deferments. Do we care? Well, we think so. The impact of complexity means that your transparency and accountability are diminished. There's more room for error. It gets expensive and inefficient because it promotes all these different changes that just make things worse. Leads to unintended consequences and inequities, and diminishes the ability of taxpayers, administrators, and even policymakers to understand the system. One of the other things we were asked to look at was the whole cycle and the timetable for the property tax system. And quite frankly, when we first started looking at this, the Department of Revenue said there really wasn't a whole lot we could change. We did continue to look at it, and some of the recommendations do reflect some things that we think will help condense this timeline. But when you're paying your property taxes in 2012, it's based on an assessment from 2011. But that assessment from 2011 is based on data that may go back all the way to 2009 or certainly 2010 in order to come up with that valuation. And even after you've paid your taxes, there are various parts of that system that continue through appeal systems and delinquency processes, and then obviously into foreclosures if it moves into that direction. Stretches out that timeline. We talked about a lot of things in the property tax working group. Again, as I mentioned, it was a group of individuals. They were not tax experts, and so we had to kind of work our way through the entire system in order to find all of the different things that we could look to in terms of trying to simplify that system. And this is a listing of many of the topics that we undertook as a part of that system. Including looking at the various processes that surround the property tax system. So let's begin. I just to talk a little bit about some of the recommendations that came out of this process, and appreciate all of the people that were a part of making this happen. One of the things we did was recognize that it is complex, and it might help to have people have a, some kind of a sense of some of the principles that should be out there as you think about the property tax, as you're trying to assess whether or not a change is worthwhile or not. What kinds of things should you be looking at in terms of how to better the system? We think that it should be they should be trying to make it simpler and more transparent, and that should be a priority. That the property tax for most people is a local tax. People think of the property tax as the thing that provides dollars for local government. And so keeping it a local tax for local services. But the taxes should be based on the property. It's an ad valorem system. It should be based on the property and not who's using it or who owns it or some of the all of the other complexities that have gotten into the system. That you should be looking at things in broader terms and not trying to specify an exemption or credit for a particular property or for a very limited group or a very specific type of situation. And when you do think that you need to benefit a particular group for whatever reason, that you do it outside of the property tax system. But also think that because some of these things get into the system and then a few years later nobody really understands how it got there, what you were trying to accomplish, maybe it's changed. They provide some kind of a statement so that somebody in the future can have an understanding of what it is you were trying to accomplish. And also in more real-time terms, a local impact note. A lot of times the system gets changed, but nobody's recognizing the impact that it has on the local governments, particularly the counties who have to administer whatever that change is and go through and do, whether it's a computer change or another box on that flow chart or whatever it is, that all those things have an impact on somebody and it's making the system more expensive. And then also just sunsets. It's taking a look at once every once in a while to see if it still makes sense to do a specific kind of a change to the property tax system. So here are some of the recommendations that came out of this group of things that should be considered. Certainly, as we looked at trying to simplify and make it more understandable, the number one thing, and it's highlighted here, is to reduce the number of classifications. There really is no reason for this system to have 55 different classifications. Use broader classifications. Clean out some of the special limited classifications. Eliminate tiers and parcel linkages and special deals for limited groups of people. Establish a relationship between the classifications. If you want farmers to pay less than homeowners or business, you know, to try to come up with the relationship that you think the different types of properties should have between each other. And in our recommendations, we did come up with what we thought would be four basic classifications, and I believe that you have a copy of the report, and we went through all of the different classifications and put them into those four baskets. Again, confine the property tax to local government, using state funding for state mandates, eliminate the state general tax, and keep the revenue within this local property tax system. In terms of making it more understandable, we found a number of things we thought could be improved about the property tax informational notices, to include the market value exclusion, but show not only the estimated market value, but also the taxable market value so people could understand the difference between those two. Better timing of notices, basic budget information and links so people could find out what they're paying for with that property tax. We noticed as we looked at a lot of the property taxes, you've got 87 different counties with 87 different kinds of statements, and some of them didn't have email addresses or website addresses, and that should be there. In this day and age, every county has a website, and they should be linked so that people can get to the information that they need to get to. And providing that web-based detail on budgets and on levies so that people can better understand what it is, again, that they're paying for. And allow for electronic delivery of notices. We also spent a little time, and I won't say we spent a lot of time, there was just a lot of frustration, I think, for people as they went through the truth and taxation process, and we can certainly have a lot more conversation about that, but in the recommendations, we did talk about engaging taxpayers electronically as opposed to through published notices or in-person meetings. We also highlighted some administrative changes in our recommendations, investigating a statewide computer system, converting that tax capacity system to an assessed value system, avoiding limits and caps and freezes, and again, improving notices and the timing of those to make them more effective. And looking at the property tax calendar, again, it was a challenge. But we did see that there were a lot of places where we consolidate reporting dates to simplify the basic assessment timeline, and appreciate the assistance of the assessors and their organization in helping us come up with that information. We also, in looking at that length of timeline and trying to get to some recommendations to help make that valuation more timely. I mean, if your taxes are being based on things that are happening, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, you're going to see, especially if when things are, when the values are going up or even when the values are going down, people are feeling that that's not fair. They're being taxed on something that isn't what their value is currently. And trying to consolidate that timetable, one, by changing some of the definitions for the sales comparisons that, that are needed to do some of the assessments, to make that more timely. And what we're talking about there is when they're trying to look at what's happening with property in your area, they'll look at an area. But if you're a specific type of property, maybe within your area, there wasn't a sale in the last year or two. And so they're going farther and farther back to find a sale to get some idea of what's happened to those property values. If they expand that area, then they have more opportunity to find the sales to give them a better sense of what's happening with the property taxes. And there are some things that can be done in that area. And also encouraging the transition to electronic certificates for real estate value so that information gets into the system in a more timely way. In looking at property tax components, and again, as you go through the report, you'll see a lot of discussion about the various components. One of the things that we looked at is, again, if you're you want to provide some benefit for a particular property or property type, and in particular something like homesteads. I mean, that seems to be something that we all want to see some kind of recognition for our taxpayers for homesteads. That what we saw was that rather than working it through the system with its own classification or its own tiers, to use the property tax refund program to provide homestead benefits instead of using credits and exclusions. We also saw that there are different definitions of homestead, and one of the things that we could do to simplify the system was to standardize that definition of homestead so that it is a house, a garage, and 1 acre. And then just targeting that tax relief, again, whether it's homesteads or other types of tax relief that you want to provide to the various taxpayers, to do it through the property tax refund or through an income tax credit. We also recommend that identify the policies and evaluation principles for all the different tax preferences, the exclusions, the credits, the exemptions, the aids, the special values, the deferrals, and the refunds. And identify those that are outdated or unused. In some cases, there are only a handful of parcels that some of these exclusions, credits, or classifications even apply to. In some cases, nobody's taking advantage of them for various reasons. Our final report was made to the legislature in November. At the end of November, we were a little ahead of schedule under the legislation. We had until February to do it, but we came to a conclusion in November, and so I'm able to present you with that final report at this meeting, and I appreciate having the opportunity to do that. That is available on the Revenue Department's website, and I've provided the link to that or the address for that to download it. And I'd be very happy to stand for questions or comments about the report or any of the things I've raised.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Gaylord, and thank you for several years of leadership on this issue and the depth and breadth of the report. Let's go to questions. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is on the four property classifications that you have. You've got nonprofit, community service-oriented organizations. Would that be churches and that type of thing that fall into that category, or are they somewhere else?
Commissioner Gaylord.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
It's quite all right.
Representative, we did not change exemptions particularly for those types of properties that are constitutionally exempted from property tax. And so you won't see things that are pushing you into those things. We had talked at one point in our discussions about a concept of trying to come up with sort of some kind of, what do I call it, a de minimis classification so that there was some recognition that lots of these exempt properties do have an impact on local services and should maybe be contributing to that in some way. But we ran into a lot of legal issues that made it very difficult for that to really come to fruition. So we did not make that part of our final recommendation.
Any other members with questions for Commissioner Gaylord? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gaylord, is your presentation available to us, your PowerPoint?
I'm sure it can be.
Thank you.
Emily can send it to her, or actually she has it, so you
thank
can get
you.
It for your...
I appreciate
we can see to that.
Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I wonder whether or not, I know you handled a lot of things in a lot of different meetings, but were you able to model any of these particular recommendations and how much transition work would be need to be done in order to prevent radical changes in property tax burdens?
Commissioner Gaylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we did, actually. We had two different subcommittee groups within as a part of our working group, one dealing specifically with classification system and the other dealing with the agricultural side of the property tax. And they did do a number of runs and different things to look at the various impacts of some of what we were looking at. The problem with it all is it's how it all fits together, and you have to take the time, which of these things are you putting together with which of these other things, to see how it would all fit together, which is why we didn't get into a specific percentage or that with each of the classes, that was something we thought, as you work through what you want that system to look like, that you make those determinations as a part of that whole putting it all together.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just think that's the devil is always in the details, and which is why we so appreciate our staff who do the runs, because what might sound simple might actually create more complexity in lots of people's lives than we can imagine.
There's always
Commissioner Gaylord.
There's always issues, and we reference that in our report of that transition. And I know I've always said it's very difficult to do major tax reform without money.
I think there's general unanimity on that point. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, and thank you to the folks that worked on this. It's a very complicated area, as you have noted. Did you prioritize your recommendations, and did you specify if there are some of these recommendations that need to be done in tandem rather than be done alone?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, not really. Other than, I think almost immediately the recommendation about reducing the number of classifications just rose to the top.
Representative Ford. Okay. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Gaylord. I'm interested in recommendation number 8 on the truth and taxation process.
Okay.
I mean, when cities and counties and local units of government do the budget, that's the most important thing they do. It's setting priorities and everything else for the year. And yet, you know, and I know, and all of us know, typically the participation in the process is very, very low. And so I'm interested in some of the things you've commented here, and one was the last point, which is in the extended talk where you, we know that the actual budgeting, depending on the size of the city, may start as early as February or March. And yet there's almost no involvement at all by the public, and usually it's in that December truth and taxation meeting when everything is pretty much set in stone. Then you may see a few people, if they're not there for their assessment. A lot of times in the truth and taxation, they would be there on their assessment form, and you'd have to remind folks that was the Board of Equalization meeting back in May or whenever. So what was the discussion on? I mean, some of these things look good, you know, interactive websites where you could maybe go in the budget and do certain things. What were some of the suggestions and comments there that might improve that system?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there was strong interest in basically saying get rid of this whole thing and just throw it out. We did not say that.
Yeah.
We did try to come up with some things that we thought might help the system. Truth in taxation, as it was perhaps intended, although I'm not sure too many people understand what was intended, it just doesn't work. People don't come in to really try to understand their taxes, as you mentioned. They come in to argue their valuation, which is somewhere else in the process and not at the truth and taxation hearing. Very few of them have a substantial participation. It really isn't accomplishing what it needs to accomplish. And so as we try to look at it, what was it supposed to do? It was supposed to be an opportunity for people to have some impact on the budget. It wasn't really to deal with valuation or an individual taxpayer's property. It was to deal with, you know, what is the money going to be used for? And you're right, the process does begin much farther into the earlier in the year than that December truth and taxation hearing. And by the time it gets to that, there's very little that can be done. And if it's done, it's going to have to be done for next year because it's pretty well set. So it part of what we were trying to say is instead of using that system, try to get more information out to people. That if the idea is to have them impact the system, they have to have that information and figure out ways of making that happen. And one of the best ways we saw was to provide some of that information electronically so people could get into it and try to understand what it is that they're paying for and what are some of the choices that are being made and what's happening within that budget. Is some area going up and some area going down? And does that make sense for them from their perspective? So I know that I understand from some that there's an opportunity perhaps to take a stronger look at this, and I would encourage you to do that. I think there are so many things that you could be doing with this to make it work, and if you can't do it, get rid of it because it's hugely expensive. Over the state of Minnesota, and this estimate is somewhat old, but it's millions, at least $3 million to do this process that isn't really benefiting anyone. So you're adding to the property tax burden for something that really isn't helping. And does that make sense? And aren't there better ways? And shouldn't we be thinking about it in different ways to make it happen?
Representative Marquardt.
Chair and Commissioner Gaylord, I appreciate those comments. And I've always been one that I think we should enhance the system and try to make it work rather than just eliminate that. And I do think it takes an outreach by the local units of government. Otherwise, it's not going to occur. And in fact, I had a bill, I think, I forget when that was, but where cities and counties would actually have to go out and hold meetings. And if they did that, then they were exempt from certain things. But you kind of have to have a carrot out there. But I just think, I don't follow bocce ball because I just don't know anything about it. No one comes to me and try to interest me in that. But I may get interested in it if I saw it and someone came up to me and said, here's what it's all about. And I just think, I'm a former mayor, of course, but a lot of times as local units of government, we don't want people in the process. And so we don't go out of our way to try to. But let's say there was an incentive that the more people you got to the process, it was some incentive at the end, there would be, that we need some incentives to bring people in. And I know government and democracy, you're supposed to, you know, it's your responsibility, but it is a very complicated system, as you've mentioned, how the property taxes work. And budgets, you see them and not used to them, council members may spend a couple years just learning the budget, or commissioners, before you fully understand it, and then to expect someone from the public to look at something and make some sense of it, I don't think is fair. And so I don't know what the answer is, but I really think it's an important process. I think the intention is great, and I just think the more people you get involved, the more there's, you know, we don't seem to have any problem getting people when we're looking at raising taxes or cutting. There's all sorts of people that tend to get involved and know about that. Why isn't that on the local level? And I just, and I'm not asked, but I just don't know what the answer is, but we need to do a better job of trying.
Commissioner Gaylord.
Mr. Chair.
And I'm done.
Represent. I don't disagree. Get people involved in the process. But forcing them to go out on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock to some location, whether it's, you know, down the block or across town, it doesn't work anymore. That's not how people engage with their government anymore. The legislature, perhaps, with paid lobbyists, you got lots of people that come down here and talk to you. At the local level, we don't have that. We've got individual people, and they don't have that time and that inclination to do that. But we should be getting that information to them, and that's why we're trying to encourage that you look at web-based, electronic-based ways of engaging with people. And I can get to hundreds, if not thousands, of people with that process, as opposed to the half a dozen or a dozen mm-hmm. people, or in most cases, for most of my truth and taxation hearings, and I've been a county commissioner for 11 years, I was mayor for 10 years, I was on a city council for 8 years before that, I can probably count on my hands the number of people that have come to all those meetings in all those years.
And Representative Marquardt, I think you can get help with your bocce ball questions in the basement of the Halftime Rec Bar here in St. Paul. Representative Mahoney, can you help with the location? It's been a few years for me.
I've got multiple locations, and if you're willing to buy lunch, I'll take you there.
There you go. So we can get a couple of things taken care of.
Thanks so much.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, are you suggesting that we send lobbyists out to the counties? Because
No. We
have a few spare ones we could do without. And if you would like us to somehow mandate their participation in county government, I think we could come up with a bill for that.
I'll sign that bill.
we're just going to let that one pass, Commissioner. Representative Hertas, I believe you were looking for a recognition.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my comments, questions are a little bit of a follow-up to Representative Marquardt, who was a past mayor and served on councils, as did myself. You know, the property tax system is so convoluted, and one thing that I've noticed in my tenure at the council level, at the local level, is that, you know, in particular, people do participate in the local aspect of it because it's close, it's easy, it's convenient. Oftentimes they're recognized, they feel their voice is heard. But as you go up each level of the local government unit to school districts, which often transcend communities, several communities, larger areas, it seems like your voice is diminished. And even certainly if you were, for example, a Hennepin County taxpayer, feeling pretty muted, having to, you know, drive from a far reach of the county all the way down to, you know, protest the budget that's being proposed, which is in the billions of dollars. And so you get many, many folks that become just so frustrated and disenfranchised with it. And your mention of the electronic system really is an advance forward, because there are many people who find themselves as multiple property owners in many different townships, many different districts. All of these things seem to be kind of set in statute, and you find that if you're upset or find you want to be an appellate, you have to be in three places at the same time, oftentimes hundreds of miles apart. And so that creates a lot of difficulties. Consumers typically don't understand the system between the levy and proposing a budget and approving that, and then, you know, using the tax capacity or the taxable value to apply, you know, a multiplier factor in terms of arriving at what the actual property tax will be. Most just simply assume that, you know, my value went up and so are my taxes going to, and conversely, as property values have declined during the bubble bust, they're wondering why their property taxes aren't going down. And then they're starting to finally figure out the correlation that regardless of what your property value is, communities, local government units still need a similar amount of money to levy. And if your property value went down, probably did your neighbors as well, and that there's a correlation. My last observation is just that, not too unlike state government and state government expenditures, if you kind of think about it, you know, for every general fund dollar we're spending at the state level, roughly 42 cents is spent on education. That's a similar proportion of the property tax bill that's spent on education. When you look at about 40% of most people are impacted, about 40% for education on their property tax bill. Counties might be the parallel of our HHS budget. You know, there too at the state level we're spending about 46 cents. And there too, like in Hennepin County, you look at your property tax statement, it's generally in the 40 percentiles. So like in state government, that leaves 12 cents out of every general fund dollar to fund all of the other functions of government. That little scrap that's left over is what city runs itself on. And most people, I think, do understand that with regard to property taxes, the dollars that they expend that stay right at home are the best dollars that they can spend. So, you know, there's just this constant tension of feeling like you're a donor community, you're sending the money off, you're sending the money off, you're sending the money off, and not too much comes back. And, you know, it's very frustrating, and this, I think, creates quite a bit of the angst that there is. And then rather than fixing it, I noticed, according to your bar chart, the numbers of different tax classifications have doubled in just the last 10 or 15 years. So rather than fixing the problem, we create an exception to appease another group. And, you know, this is really the challenge. And I can clearly see that this is so complex that any radical change is most likely going to have to be phased in. It's going to be difficult for anybody to adjust both at the taxpayer level as well as on the expenditure side where governments are collecting it. And I don't know if you have any comments about what I said, but that's my observation.
Commissioner, any response?
Representative, thank you. I think you've articulated a lot of the things that we really would hope people would understand about the property tax. And first and foremost is that it's a closed system. It is a system, and I like to think about it as like a pie. And the pie is the amount of money that has been determined needs to be raised by the property tax in a given year. And the property tax system and the classification system is all about determining what slice of the pie you're going to be responsible for. And the problem is that too many people, when they look at their slice of the pie and they're unhappy about it, decide that they need some kind of special consideration, and maybe they come to you and they get an exemption, or they get a credit, or they get a new classification, or whatever it is, to help with that little piece of their pie. The problem is that the pie's still there. And so everybody else in the rest of the pie, their taxes go up.
Right.
Those people aren't in the room to argue that you just raise my taxes. It's only the guy that's trying to get his slice of the pie changed. And it's not like the income tax where your income goes up and you hit it with a certain percentage and there's the bill. You have to think of it as you're really trying to determine what slice of the pie belongs to whom. And so many people have said with the property tax system, if you could just figure out a reasonable system that tries to get to most of the things that make it a fair and equitable system, and then just leave it alone. And if there are particular issues or particular things that need to be done, that you do that outside of the system through the income-adjusted property tax relief system or some other kind of a credit or some other kind of a system to recognize that there may be some special situations. But figure out what it is you need to do to raise the dollars, make that system of allocating that pie as fair as you can, and that's what you really need to be doing. And every time you add a classification, and over the years they get added over and over again, you're making it more difficult for people to understand the system, you're making it more difficult to administer the system, you're making it more expensive to do it, you're raising taxes so that you can give somebody a benefit. Thank you.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Oh, my apologies. It's Representative Runbeck.
Thank you.
My apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to say I think it's a very nice study. I mean, I think there's a lot of great food for thought. Unfortunately, this year it doesn't appear that with the money that we're throwing at the property tax system that we're going to get any reforms done, which I think is a real tragedy. But to Representative Markwart, I mean, I agree with you. I think the fact that people are not coming to the TNT meetings is not a sign that we should throw it out. It may be a sign that, you know, all is well. People are pretty happy with how things are going. And maybe, you know, just try for once. Raise your salaries. Everybody raise your salaries. See how many people come out. I heard that that's a great draw. So.
And Representative Rodenbeck, of course, if there are reforms in the report that you're interested in, you know, staff can certainly assist you with drafting legislation and introducing bills to propose those reforms. Representative Lean.
We're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I noticed in your presentation you had suggestions for property tax relief to go directly through folks' incomes. Could you elaborate on that as far as the mechanics? Would it be on the income tax forms, or would it be like credits, or could you please elaborate on that a little bit?
Commissioner.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative. The concept was to, if you determine someone needs a special benefit or a credit or some kind of a special deal, that you give it to them directly. And the way to do that most simply is through the income tax or our preference, the property system. People are already used to filing for their property tax refund. Add another section. If you think people that have brown eyes should have a special deal, then you put it right there and you say, brown eye people, here it is.
Hazel?
Hazel. And it does a couple of things. It makes it clear, it's much more transparent that those people are getting something, that you recognize they have a special need. You know, it's really hard to be out there in the real world with hazel eyes. And use that as a way to do that. And it also perhaps gives them a place to look. Some of these things are hard to find. People don't know that they even qualify for them. And if you had a system where you had a filing for their homestead and for whatever those different kinds of things are, and it's all there, they can at least go through and say, well, maybe I qualify this. I should look for it. Does this one fit me? Does this one fit me? And you might also get them to look at it and say, why is that possible? Because we know very well that people with non-hazel eyes have it really tough, and that maybe they should have it too. It's a way of getting it out of the property tax system and making it more transparent and clear, and it gets it directly to the taxpayer. The other issue is that every time you make a small change, you put in a classification or a special credit through the system, now it has to work its way. Every time somebody comes in with a property, an assessor has to determine, now does this person have hazel eyes or not have hazel eyes, and they're going to have to figure out all of that, and it's going to complicate every transaction for the hundreds of thousands of properties that are out there. Or if it's a credit, or that somebody has to go in and change 87 county systems in order to put that into the system so that it works through and they get that credit or that change. And it isn't clear to the person who's getting it, and it isn't clear to all the other people that are paying for it that it's there.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So would you suggest it would be, I don't know, easiest or most efficient to say, let's say we worked out a new formula to say, okay, so you deserve or you are entitled to $500 worth of property tax.
See, that's a great round number.
Well, yeah, right. Would you suggest then saying, okay, that will come off of your income taxes, the amount of income tax liability you have to the state, or would it be more directed toward the property taxes paid? And also a little bit, would that be, you know, within that same calendar year, or would it be like advanced to the next calendar year?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, obviously those are the kinds of issues that are within the discretion of the legislature as you look at that. with particular regard to the current proposal that's out there for a $500 credit for property taxpayers, I think everybody wants to see property tax relief and find a way to do that. I think what I'm here representing a group and their recommendations, and I think if I were to say if we had looked at that as a group, where we would have come down is that it would have made more sense to do it through the income adjusted property tax refund system as opposed to direct credit on the income tax. But having said that, we prefer that it's a direct credit on the income tax directly to the taxpayer instead of working it through as a separate kind of a credit exemption exclusion or classification within the property taxes.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions from members? Commissioner, thank you very much. There are a couple of people who want to make comments, I think, and you can certainly stick around there or in the audience as you prefer. But thank you very much for the work of the working group and for your presentation today. You did one of the chair's favorite things. You didn't read the PowerPoint to me. You assumed that we could read.
Isn't that nice?
It's a good place to start. Thank you, Commissioner. I do know that the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, if I've got that right, wish to come in. If there's others in the audience who wish to comment, folks can keep their comments to about 3 minutes.
Certainly.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Diving. I'm Houston County Assessor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also the Vice Chair of the Legislative Committee. And what you're getting is a handout of our position statement for the 2013 legislative session and a final report that was put together by our chair of the legislative committee. So you can look at that. I guess I would like to thank thank you goes out to the 2010 legislative group to put this together. I mean, we were, you know, it's something that as the assessor group, we were looking for to happen to make things a little more transparent and understanding. And then to the group itself, I actually attended probably all of them, except maybe two or three of them, and there was a lot of good work that went on and good discussion that went on, and so I thank the Property Tax Working Group and those that participated in those meetings. The one thing I think about is, you know, a lot of this will make life easier for us as assessors, but that's not what it's about. I think it's about making it easier for property owners to understand and see what the transparency of the property tax system. We know how to administer it, so the way it sits today, we can deal with it. And then I would like to say it's a document that I think that you can pull out over the next few years as you put legislation into place and use some of those recommendations. So that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to comment on the working group, the Property Tax Working Group report? Seeing none. Members, thank you all very much. Keep your eyes peeled on your emails for agendas for our meetings next week. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.